when healthy. And although I thought Matt did a great job, Josh will be the starter.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott clarifying that after the bye week, if Allen is healthy, Allen is the starter instead of Matt Barkley. Although some fans want Barkley to start. Still amazes me.
Just put down that take right now. Lay it down nicely in bed and just put a blanket over it and just it's over. Done. Don't even say it anymore. It doesn't make any sense.
Joining us now on the Wester Hotline from the Draft Network, Trevor Sikkema. Hey, Trevor, did you ever figure out that Chick-fil-A question you were posing on Twitter the other day?
So I was told that, because I had some Chick-fil-A sauce left over that was in my fridge. Right. I won't admit how long it's been in there, because that would be embarrassing. But people told me that it can't go longer than 2 months, so kind of pushing the limit here. So we'll see how this goes after this. This might be the last phone interview I ever do.
Well, we'll take note whether you ever join us again, because we actually just have one opening up around here for the first time ever. So I'm going to need to probably know the answer to this question, so I'll be interested. Trevor Sikkema from the Draft Network, Buccaneers reporter for the Pewter Report, is joining us now on WGR. And Trevor, you wrote an interesting piece about Aaron Rodgers last night. Amazingly, like you said, some people think that the Packers have a problem in Aaron Rodgers and not their head coach. Your thoughts on that whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as fans, and I put this in there too, you know, as a fan of a football team, it is 100% within your right of however you want to be a fan to be disappointed, annoyed, you know, even angry when the starting quarterback, whoever it is, you know, misses a throw like Aaron Rodgers did on that 3rd and 2 at the end of the game, or maybe misses an easier read that ends up killing a drive. Quarterbacks make those kinds of mistakes all the time, and a guy with Aaron Rodgers' caliber, the kind of player he is, you can understand that, you know, it's a little annoying when you see him make great moves and then he'll make a couple of dumb ones here. But the thing is that you got to have context through it all. You got to realize that this is the most talented passer in the NFL. And you can't sit here and say that the Green Bay Packers in any way have a quarterback problem. Now, has Rodgers been perfect this year? No. Has he been a little bit rebellious? Probably against Mike McCarthy, who is the real problem here, I think, is their head coach. Yes, but that all goes into the context of things. You can't say that they have a quarterback problem. That's just straight up not true. What they have is they got a head coach problem. Mike McCarthy's been going downhill. It's probably his worst year this year. The moves that they've made around him, they are getting some sacks, which is crazy, but I don't think that's really sustainable with the guys that they have. They've got a super inexperienced secondary, a super inexperienced wide receiver core outside of Davante Adams and the guys that are producing. And so it is so many things around Rodgers, not Rodgers himself. So even though he might be struggling in certain individual situations here and there, you've got to realize who your quarterback still is and how basically every other team in the NFL would take Aaron Rodgers for 3 first-round draft picks, you know. So that's kind of the point of the article, is that I wanted to say, hey, you know what? You're allowed to be annoyed as a fan, but just have some context with it. Make sure you know what you're talking about there.
I mean, yeah, the only kind of take that I can see that would be just as scorching hot is those that say Nathan Peterman didn't get a fair shake. So, Trevor, it's one of those things, though, like just watching Aaron Rodgers playing, and for people to even have that kind of a take, though, you found, I probably think, a record amount of ways to say no, that Aaron Rodgers is not the problem in that article. I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah, I originally just wanted to put the word no in 72-point font for the entire article and not say one other word. But I figured my editors, my bosses would not be too happy with that, even though they'd probably agree with it. And so I actually looked up on Google, did some research, really dug deep, found I think it was 29 different ways to say no, maybe it was 27. Just really had to make sure that I got my point across early that no, the Packers do not have a quarterback problem.
Is he the best quarterback of all time in your mind?
I think he's the most talented quarterback of all time, because you got to break it up. Because when you talk about the greatest quarterback of all time, you really can't argue against Tom Brady at this point. I just, how long he's been playing the game, the dynasty that has been him and Bill Belichick. And you can't take Bill Belichick away from him. You can't be like, well, what would he be like with Belichick? Well, we don't know. He's just an elite and one of the greatest ever, probably the greatest ever with him. So that's all we got. So the rings, the accomplishments, the sustained success, how old he is, how long he's been playing the game, greatest of all time in terms of that, I'd probably say it's Brady. But in terms of the most talented passers of all time, you would be hard-pressed to find one that I would agree with more than Rodgers. He's absolutely, if not the greatest, then in the conversation with the only couple that would be up there.
Around the league, I mean, the stats are incredible. We all know it, except here in Buffalo, of course. But the passing yardage, the completion percentage numbers, Breeze is at 77%. Patrick Mahomes showing up on here. Would you think the gap is closer now between maybe the middle-of-the-road quarterback in the league and those elite quarterbacks like Rodgers, like Brady, and the guys at the top? Would you say the gap is closer now than really it's ever been before in the league?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. That's a good way to put that, because we've kind of been trying to figure that out all year. It's like, hey, why exactly are these passing yards being so good? And, you know, you can see guys, I think with the elevation of the passing statistics and the efficiency, it opens the door for a lot of criticism. Like, you know, for example, I've seen Falcons fans criticize Matt Ryan. I've seen people criticize guys like Cam Newton, things like that. And you look at their stats and it's like, oh, wait a second. Their stats are great. And I think the reason why, you know, even Aaron Rodgers, for goodness sake, you know, we just talked about this. People are over here complaining about Rodgers. He's got 3,000 yards, 19 touchdowns, and one interception. And people are out here trying to complain about it. And I think the reason is because you are seeing efficient quarterback play from so many other quarterbacks in the NFL that I do agree. I think that's a really good way to put it. The elevation of that middle class of quarterbacks, if you will, that middle of the pack, is much closer to the top tier than it was before, to where it's not necessarily this Grand Canyon. You know, would you rather have guys like Brady, Breeze, Rodgers? Yes, those guys are still at the top. But you can get by with a lot of these other quarterbacks, and I think you're finding that out now. You know, if you get the right offense, the right offensive coordinator, the good mismatched pieces, and really, I honestly think it all boils down to, if you can figure out how to create space in the red zone and score some touchdowns when you get down there, you've got an offense that can win you football games almost any Sunday. So I think that's a really good way to put it, actually. You know, why this has happened? I think it probably has to do with the evolution of how you're using certain players and how creativity is at an all-time high. Certainly rules don't really favor the defense at this point in the age of the NFL, but I think it's a combination of a lot of that. But yeah, I think you're right. Definitely closes the gap on how quarterbacks can perform and how they can get wins for a football team.
Trevor Sekema joining us on the West Her Hotline of the Draft Network, and let's dive into some talk about the draft. Trev, it's been a bit since your last mock draft up on that website, but I'm noticing a bit of a theme there from all of you guys at the Draft Network putting Jonah Williams with the Buffalo Bills. So, yeah, it's not the sexiest kind of pick, but it's clear that you guys are all seeing that the Bills have a huge problem that needs to be addressed on the offensive line.
Yeah, I think really, no matter how you slice it, what the Buffalo Bills and when you make an investment for a quarterback the way that they did last year with Josh Allen, it's not just a one-year thing. And I think that's the theme that all of us over at the Draft Network are kind of trying to convey to everyone, that, hey, it wasn't just the picks that you used on Josh Allen to notify the resources they're going to put there. You have to then have a responsibility to surround him with the things necessary to be a successful quarterback, because you don't just want to stick a guy that back there because he'll fail. We've seen that plenty in the past with all kinds of talented quarterbacks. And so whether it is an offensive lineman, or, you know, we pegged wide receivers to Buffalo in a couple of the mock drafts that we have done, it's got to be something to help him out. I think the majority of really these next two drafts for Buffalo, you've got to look at their top 50 picks, their top 100 picks, and got to think that the majority, over half of what they're using, has to be resources towards Allen, helping him out, making sure that investment is worth it. Because if you don't, then you're just failing the investment of the picks before you even get a chance to see that it blossoms. And so Jonah Williams, fantastic offensive lineman. I mean, people talk about, hey, maybe he's got some short arms, perhaps he's not ideal for a tackle in the NFL. Listen, thresholds only exist if the guy can't perform. And Jonah Williams has been a tackle for the best team in the country for the last 2 years, going on his third year. He's gone up against some really stiff competition in the SEC, and he has proven himself time and time again. And, hey, you know what? Even if you moved him back into guard, which I would not recommend, I'd say that he's got better tape over a tackle, but you're getting a good player either way. So you are getting a very solid offensive lineman, a guy that can play multiple spots on the offensive line, and really a true plug-and-play kind of guy who is a reliable talent on the offensive line that you can get creative with until you fill out the rest of the offensive line how you like it, or the offensive weapons, whatever it is. Jonah Williams would be a great pick for the Bills.
Defensive lineman Ed Oliver in the news. I'm sure you've had to have seen the clip of him yelling at Major Applewhite, who me and Derek disagreed on having a great name. What is he like as a player? I know he's been in a lot of mocks near the top of the draft, and even some I think I've seen have the Bills pegged to possibly draft him. What is he as a player, and does this really hurt his draft stock, this whole outburst at his coach?
Yeah, he is, just from a tape perspective and a production percentage, completely dominant as a college football player. And it was blatantly obvious. I think he had 22 tackles for loss his true freshman season at Houston. And, you know, just from age 18, 19, he was clearly so much better than everyone else in his competition. That we've seen that over the last three years. No one can block this guy. He's phenomenal off the snap. He's got great strength. His mobility for an interior defensive lineman is insane. Hand placement, how violent he is, the moves that he has. A true disruptor in the middle, and truly the best player in that conference for the last 3 years. Now, I will say this. He's only about 275, maybe 280 pounds. And if you're talking about an interior defensive lineman at the NFL level, that has to be somewhat of something that's on your mind. Yes, you look at his production and say, okay, here's a guy who's been clearly dominant, which is what you want to see over the last 3 years. But he is going to score in, like, the bottom 10th percentile in both size and weight. And it's just something you've got to be able to consider, knowing that there aren't many guys like that that succeed at the NFL level. Now, everybody would say, hey, Aaron Donald does the less weight. Okay, well, for one, Aaron Donald's about 10 pounds bigger than Ed Oliver, which is a big deal in the trenches. And two, I don't know if you really want to just point to Aaron Donald and say, oh, yeah, no big deal. He'll just be the next Aaron Donald, when he is also himself an outlier. So it's a little bit tricky there. Still an elite talent, but a little bit of thing to think about there. In terms of the jacket and the incident on the sideline, look, man, I mean, Ed Oliver declared for the NFL draft basically a year ago. He came out and said that this is going to be my last year. And so people have wondered how much he was going to put into this season, how much he's protecting himself from maybe not getting hurt, not wanting to play. And if you want me to be honest, I think a little bit of that spilled over into the altercation that he had with his head coach. I think his head coach said, hey, you're not active today. Take the jacket off. Basically saying, you know, giving him a little bit of a jab, wondering if Oliver could have been playing or if he should have been playing. I don't really know everything that goes into that situation, but I know it's really tricky when a guy has basically already checked out and is looking to the next level, knowing how much money is at risk, wondering if that's going to affect his stock if he gets hurt. And so I don't know if this particular I would say no, this doesn't actually affect his stock, but it does bring context to the situation, and it's a thing that might end ugly for Houston's best player that they may have ever had.
Trevor, looking at the rest of this draft class, and I mean, we're getting a lot of differing opinions, it seems, these days about the wide receiver class for this year. And it really kind of just speaks to me in a bit of interest of what the Bills could use there as another wide receiver to help out with moving forward with Zay Jones probably as a number two guy. But the Bills could use another, they could use a lot more talent at the wide receiver position. And what are some of your favorite guys over there at the wideouts?
I love this wide receiver class. I really do. I think there's a ton of talent to be had really throughout the entire top 75. We can get an impact player at wide receiver. I mean, my number one guy right now is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. He's over at Stanford right now. He has got a basketball style, and I knew we used it that as a cliche, but he's got a basketball style that he just straight out rebounds these little cornerbacks for the ball, and he looks pretty unstoppable when they make him the focal point of the offense. I wonder how fast he is because he is a big body guy. I wonder what kind of separation he has. The combine might tell us a little bit about that because he struggles with it somewhat in his tape. But he's a guy who reminds me a lot of Marquise Colston, who had a lot of dominant years with a guy like Drew Brees when you just, hey, if you need me on third down, if you need me in the red zone, just throw that ball up there and I got it. That's the kind of guy that Arcega-Whiteside is. A couple other guys, Hakeem Butler, Kelvin Harmon, Riley Ridley, Marquise Brown, they've all got their little flavors to them, right? I mean, Harmon and Butler are two big-bodied guys. They're alphas. They're ex-wide receivers. They're guys that you're going to put one-on-one, and you can expect them to win. Then in terms of guys like Riley Ridley and Marquise Brown, really good route runners, guys that can attack deep down the field, technicians and how they use their feet, their route combinations, the diversity that you can use there. And so really throughout this entire top 75, the Bills are in a good spot to need a wide receiver this year because even if they went, say, offensive line with their first pick, they could get a really great wide receiver piece and a guy that can contribute right away, I think, in rounds two or three, whenever they end up picking there.
You wrote a piece on Tyree, or I think it was you, wrote a piece on Tyree Jackson a little ways back, comparing him to maybe being this year's Josh Allen, the UB quarterback. Not just on him, but the quarterback class as a whole this year. How do you see it, and how do you think that the UB product, Jackson, fits into that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we had a lot more hope for this quarterback class going into the year. Justin Herbert would kind of look like he was going to be the main guy out of Oregon. He's been okay, but it's not like he set the world on fire and we've really been able to tip our cap to him and be like, okay, there's the top quarterback in the draft. Plus, not even sure he comes out this year as an honor class. Dwayne Haskins looked great early on from Ohio State. Who knows if he ends up leaving after a cold streak here to end the year. Will Greer, Drew Locke, David Jones, those are guys who are seniors. They're coming out, but how much do you like each of those guys will differ a lot between schools. And then you get a guy like Tyree Jackson, and, hey, he's got – I did really early in the season, I believe this is in September, August or September, I looked at his tape from last year and kind of previewed him going into the year. Saw the big body, saw the big arm, saw that he – and then recently I've seen that he's played even better this year. And so improving every year because he definitely looked unorthodox, a little unnatural at times in his past tape, but – boy, when he unleashed that arm, few arms in college football like it, truly. And so, you know, that's a big reason why a guy like Patrick Mahomes went as high as he went. And you see when you marry a guy like that with the perfect head coach that we're seeing in Kansas City, you can make magic happen. Not saying that Tyree Jackson is the next Patrick Mahomes, but there are traits that you could like. And in an age where a lot of offensive coordinators are figuring out how to make things easy for guys with a lot of arm talent early on, get them warmed up to the NFL game, perhaps Tyree Jackson can have that. So landing spot is going to be a big deal for him just because he's going to have to make sure that his technique is like consistently worked on, perfected, because as I always say, you know, we like quarterbacks that have the big arm, that can stretch it down the field, put the ball anywhere they want on the football field. But the bigger the arm, the more technique you have to have, the more precise you have to be, because if you're not, then that thing's just a loose cannon, and it'll turn into turnovers, and then you won't be on rosters very long. And so for Jackson, it's going to be a continued growth there. But I like him. He's a quarterback who I think is going to be a mid-round guy that a team's going to take a chance on and hopefully hit his upside with.
Trevor Sikkema from the Draft Network at Tampa Bay, Trey. He also covers the Buccaneers for the Pewter Report. And I have to get one Buccaneers question in here before you before you head out of here. Is Jameis Winston's time in Tampa over?
Oh, man, way to give me the difficult question that I could go probably for hours on at the very end. I would say that, no, it is not over. I think that Jameis is going to get his chance to start again at some point this season just because I don't see the Bucs winning that many games. I think once they're mathematically eliminated, once it's kind of clear that Dirk Cutter, their head coach, his fate might be sealed, I do think they go back to Winston just because they got to know what they got in this guy. They're about to pay him $21 million next year, as long as he's healthy, in that fifth-year option, and then wonder if he's the franchise quarterback still. So I got to think that they've got to give him a couple of more games the rest of this season to close it out. And if I had to bet, I would still bet that Jameis Winston is the starting quarterback for the Buccaneers to start next season.
All right, we'll end it here with one quick and very easy question. Trevor, your thoughts on Patrick Mahomes' catch-up obsession?
Yeah, that we gotta get out of here with that. Yeah, look, man. If you want to put ketchup on mac and cheese, I don't like it, but I'll let it happen. On steak, that can't be my MVP. That's got to go into the MVP consideration, and we got to dock him a couple of points for that.
What about on eggs? Ketchup on eggs, fair or foul?
I'm okay with that, just because eggs are a
what
weird
is your problem with
me
with the ketchup on eggs?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm good with ketchup on eggs.
Okay, all right. One or two, I'm outnumbered, so fine. I'll settle. Fine, ketchup on eggs is okay.
That's the hill Joe's choosing to die on.
No,
here.
I'm not dying on it. I'm getting off the hill. All right, Trevor, thank you as always for joining us. So you can follow him at Tampa Bay Trey, and we look forward to talking to you as the NFL season progresses here and we get closer to the draft.
Yeah, guys, always a treat anytime.
Thanks, Trevor. Trevor Sikkema on the Wester Hotline. We will take a timeout here. And we'll talk some UB football. Little Tyree Jackson talk there with Trevor at the end. We'll talk Tyree Jackson, Anthony Johnson, UB after their big loss to Ohio this week. They play at Bowling Green or home Bowling Green? They play Bowling Green next week.
They play at Bowling Green next week. And, I mean, hey, we can even dabble in the basketball teams there as well.
Yeah, and UB's game next week at Bowling Green, Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, at noon. If the Bulls win, they're MAC East champions, and they'll be in the MAC championship game, which is on Friday, November 30th at Ford Field in Detroit.
Exciting.
So we could have a little mini UB roundtable with John and with Brad Ryder here.
Brad Ryder coming up next from the UB broadcast over on ESPN 1520. He'll join myself, Derek, and John next here on WGR.
The handoff back in the pocket. Tyree gonna throw the ball deep. Looking for Anthony Johnson. It is caught! All the way inside the 20-yard line. It's a first down for the Bulls on a big one to Anthony Johnson.
That is from Wednesday's UB loss to Ohio. Tyree going deep there to Anthony Johnson on that play. It was a great throw. One of the few highlights throughout the game. I didn't see a lot of the second half, though, so I can't actually speak to if there were more highlights. Brad Ryder now joining us on the Wester Hotline, joining me, Jody Biasi, and Derek Kramer, as well as John Simon behind the board, big UB guy himself. Brad, how's it going?
What's up, guys? How are you?
I am good. Tough loss, tough pill to swallow probably on Wednesday. Luckily, though, they get to play a 2-8 Bowling Green team. So what are your thoughts on the loss to Ohio and how the season is shaping up now?
I think my first takeaway is that I'm going to stop saying such nice things about Athens, Ohio on the pregame show. Every time I'm there, I get all excited because it reminds me of Geneseo, where I went to school. Mm. And it's like Geneseo, if they had D1 athletics. It's just the vibe. It's just cool. You know, it's in the middle of nowhere, and it's a great college town where everything just seems to revolve around the students, and it's got a nice vibe to it. And every pregame show, I rave about that. And then, like, I don't know, 7 minutes, 8 minutes into the first quarter, I remember that it's been a house of horrors for the Bulls. You know, they haven't won there in 10 years. I thought going into the game, all right, haven't won in 10 years, haven't won a MAC championship in 10 years. Now is a good time to kind of fix both of those things. But after the first drive, which was very successful for the Bulls, they just got run over. And I don't have a real solid explanation for it. They looked different on both sides of the ball than they really have in any game this year. The good news is that they've got what should be a lopsided victory on the road coming up in front of them. I don't think numbers are out yet, but the Bulls should be like a 2-touchdown favorite to win at a last place Bowling Green the Falcons team on Friday, and that puts this one away and puts them right where they want it to be, which is in Detroit for the MAC championship game on November 30th, where they would take on Northern Illinois. Obviously, they've got some work to do. There are some new things to talk about over the course of about a week and what week and 2 days, week and 3 days, getting ready for the game. But it should not be a problem. The only other loss of the season, I was a little worried that their overall mentality might not be where it needed to be, that they would be flustered by getting essentially run over by Army. And they bounced back, obviously, incredibly well. They were great the following week, and they've been excellent over the course of the season. So They've shown resiliency within games. I fully expect them to show resiliency here over the course of the season and bounce back from this one. Go out and get the job done next Friday, a week from today, and then head to the MAC Championship game.
Brad Ryder joining us on the Wesher Hotline. Brad, that MAC Championship game, obviously you're looking probably at Northern Illinois for that one. And
for sure. It's definitely them.
It's going to be an interesting challenge for them because I saw Northern Illinois off of the schedule this year for UB, and I kind of just like wiped a drip of sweat off my brow for that because like Northern Illinois would be a team that would make me nervous in those sorts of ways. I think that winning this kind of game, though, would get you a little bit of a better bowl, but I think that loss to Ohio probably ruined any chances at a more prestigious bowl for the Bulls this season.
Well, I don't really think prestigious. I mean, put it this way, they were in play. A small percentage chance, but they were in play for the Fiesta Bowl. The Fiesta Bowl is one of the New Year's Six bowls. It's the slot where the top group of five team is going to go. That slot is probably going to go to Central Florida. They're certainly in the lead for that spot, but they've got a tough one against Cincinnati this week, and they can lose, and then they become a 10-1 team because they wouldn't go to their championship game. There are all these different things that could happen. Utah State still needs to lose. I think they've got Boise State coming up this week. All this stuff needed to happen, but if the Bulls had taken care of business against Ohio, add another win against Bowling Green, and then go beat Northern Illinois, now you're talking about a team that's sitting at 12-1 and might be the only one-loss team in the group of five. At that point, they might have gone to the Fiesta Bowl. Outside of that, which was a long shot, obviously, it's not really about prestigious bowls. It's about filling the slots that are allocated to the MAC, that the MAC has tie-ins to. They've got tie-ins to four bowls for real, and then one officially, they're like the backup for the Big Ten and the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit. That's where the Bulls are most likely to wind up. I know there's been some speculation, and I've been involved in it a little bit too, that maybe the Big Ten can't fill all of its slots. I'm looking right now at six slots they need to fill and seven teams that have six wins or more for them. So, you know, if you thought the Bulls were going to play their way into some random bowl, that the MAC is just going to let their best team go play somewhere that's not affiliated with the MAC, I think that was kind of, I don't know what the word is, overly optimistic. Mm-hmm. The Bulls are in a conference. The conference has affiliations with Bulls, and they are likely to go to one of those. There are other opportunities that sometimes present themselves. It's a really kind of convoluted system that exists, and other things could pop up. But to plan on something other than the Bulls that are on the list right in front of us, I think was not the right way to look at it.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm guilty of some hype then after they had such a promising season here, and that second loss just kind of knocked me down from, I guess, what was cloud nine, right?
You're allowed to be excited about the team, but I think looking at a team that had never won nine wins in a season before and seeing them win nine wins with still possibly three games left on their schedule, I mean, you might be looking at a 12-2 UB Bulls team still. So, I mean, I'm kind of torn because I was disappointed by the loss, as was everyone else, affiliated with the program. But it's still the best season that the program has ever had. And I think to a lot of people, this great season may have come out of nowhere. So maybe people jumped on board, and I'm not accusing anyone in particular of this, but maybe people jumped on board just a couple weeks ago and said, whoa, look at this team. They've only got one loss. They can be 13-1. They can, whatever. They're going to be ranked 13th by the end of the year, something like that. If you just jumped on board, well, now you're looking at a team that's, 2-1. I've watched this team go 9-2, and it's been an incredible ride. And I've been doing this for, 11 years or something. It's the best team they've ever had. It's better than the MAC championship team back in 2008. They may not get that same accomplishment because Northern Illinois is a tough team. And they could slip up against Bowling Green too. But none of that is lost, or none of that takes away the fact that this is the most impressive group that the program has ever put out on the field. And I haven't lost an appreciation for that, but I think somebody who is only catching on to the program now might not quite get it, because you watched a couple of wins, then you watched a big loss, and you think that's the story of the season. It's really not. The story is that this team has won nine games.
What do you think of the quarterback and how he's progressed? How's Tyree Jackson looked really in the later part of the season? The stats have cooled a little bit. Obviously, you didn't have to do a lot against, what was it, Kent State 2 weeks ago. So what is your feeling on Jackson and his future now?
I mean, he's going to the NFL. When does that happen? I mean, I went into this season thinking the Bulls probably have a first-round draft pick in Anthony Johnson this year and a first-round draft pick in Tyree Jackson next year. And then as the season progressed and as he got off to this red-hot start, you know, a lot of it started to be, well, is Tyreek going to come out early? I'm hoping that some of his struggles of late, and struggles might not even be the right word, but there have been some issues. He's got some things to work on. Would he benefit from another year in school? Yeah, would Josh Allen have benefited from another year in school? Would most of the quarterbacks who have come out early have benefited? Yeah, but they've got to weigh the pros and the cons. You know, I think it's going to come down to what he hears about where he's going to be selected. I mean, if he goes into the draft, he's going to be selected. So, like, right off the bat, he's got that opportunity. Regardless of anything that has happened, assuming his health is okay over the course of the next couple of games, if he decides he wants to be drafted by a team in the NFL, he will be drafted by a team in the NFL. Make no mistake about that. But is he a day two pick? Is he a day three pick? Don't know. He's got an opportunity, and I think scouts would tell him to stick around, develop further, keep working on his game, put together an even stronger resume. He's got an opportunity to be picked at the top of the 2020 draft. So are you more interested in getting out of here and moving on to the NFL and starting to collect a paycheck instead of just a scholarship? Maybe. Or are you maybe more interested in developing your game further and becoming an elite NFL prospect next year, like no-brainer, everyone agrees type of prospect. That's the kind of stuff that I think is going to weigh into the decision that Tyree Jackson is going to have to make, because for sure, if he decides he wants to get drafted, he gets drafted. It's just a matter of when.
Brad, another player on that UB team who's got NFL potential is wide receiver Anthony Johnson. And, of course, he went down early in the year with that leg injury. But since he's come back, it seems like he's really bounced back strong. I mean, what have you seen in his game this year? What makes him, you know, such an intriguing NFL prospect at the receiver position?
I think I'd start with the fact that there's literally nothing wrong with his game. Like, there's nothing that you would want him to do better than he does it. He's an excellent route runner. He is excellent after the catch. He has great hands, so he makes those catches. He's excellent with his feet. He is capable of really anything that you ask him to do. He's not huge, but he's got good size. You know, he's 6'2", and I don't even want to misquote the weight, but, you know, he's a 6'2", 220-pound guy, in that range, whatever it is. Absolutely big enough to be a number one receiver in the NFL. He's not the, you know, Calvin Johnson, Superman prototype size, but you look at him and he just, from the time he set foot on campus, I shouldn't say that, he redshirted, but from the time he started playing for the Bulls last year, it was just clearly obvious that he was, a next level type of player. And none of that has changed. He fought through the injury this year. And what I thought was really interesting, too, was that it was, you know, 3-4 games where he wasn't really out there. We would wonder week to week whether or not he was going to get in the lineup. And there was some thought, like, wait, is this guy just preserving himself for the NFL draft? No, not at all. He wanted to get back out there. And the coaching staff and the trainers, et cetera, felt that they needed him more later. They needed the 100% version of him later. So he did get mixed in a little bit. He'd, you know, play little spots in the red zone while he was hurt. And, you know, that was, I thought him just, you know, being a good team guy. But ultimately, they wanted to get him back and healthy. And since he's been back and healthy, he's been a tremendous threat. And he really changes this offense. And I know, you know, 2 days removed from the loss at Ohio, it doesn't seem like, you know, this guy can do anything he wants. But this guy can do anything he wants on the football field, and having that as a threat has really allowed the Bulls to do, you know, more things with their other receivers, more things with their running game. Tyree Jackson knows that he's got this guy, and he knows that he can take an extra, if he can buy himself an extra second or two in the pocket, that he's going to have this guy breaking free. And it's not the traditional scramble drill where the receivers have to come back to the ball. Tyree Jackson can get the ball anywhere on the field. So often what you'll see, and this is unusual in football at any level, even in the NFL, a scramble drill turns into, you know, what you would do playing in the sandlot. And that is guys making moves to break deep. And Anthony Johnson has hooked up with Tyree Jackson on more than one occasion like that. You know, he's a deep threat. You put him in a slot. He's uncoverable. Everything you could possibly want out of a receiver, he gives you. So, you know, that's why everything you're seeing, hearing, reading, about Anthony Johnson is that he's a first round type of guy. And I fully expect that he will be.
Brad, thank you as always for joining us. Hopefully the next time we're talking, we'll be talking either MAC Championship or maybe hopefully where UB will be playing during the bowl season. Thanks for coming on with us.
We'll do both.
Awesome. Can't wait. Thanks, Brad. At Brad Reiter on Twitter is where you can follow him. We will come back and wrap things up before Shope and the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. Jody Biasi and Derek Kramer on WGR.
Obviously, we got 6 games in 9 nights before we get to a two-day break, so it's going to be a grind, number one, but I think it's also a great challenge for our group. We're playing some very good hockey teams, starting against Winnipeg tomorrow. We just can control what we can control. If we're on top of our game, we can have success, but it's going to take our best game.
Sabres head coach Phil Housley. Sabres at Jets tonight at 8 o'clock, pregame at 7. John Simon running everything behind the board. How long have you been on the board now? 6 a.m.?
For today, yes. I've been here running the board since 6, been here since 5.
Marathon man.
You've got a minute left. How's it feel to be getting out of here?
Honestly, the 10 hours went by pretty quick, but you know, when you're dealing with great personalities like yourselves the morning guys
up.
More
what
or less,
guy.
You know, not whatever. They're you know, they're just there, but you know, you guys made it easy for me.
What a guy.
Before we get out of here, we need to rank the most obnoxious and annoying fan bases. And one city has not been represented and not been mentioned. Philadelphia needs to be mentioned. I don't need to put them up high. Sorry, Kyle. Kyle Powell just walked in. He's got the shirt. It reminded me. I don't need to put them at one.
You just threw a baseball in the studio. You got to look out, man.
I don't need to put them at one. But they are. Even you would have to admit, as I've admitted, that Buffalo fans can be obnoxious. That Philadelphia fans can be obnoxious. So for the record.
Did they throw snowballs at Santa?
Yeah, that's the
one time, yes, I know, but it's still infamous.
Okay, quickly. Number one, Notre Dame. We okay
yes.
with that?
Yes, cool.
Okay, number two.
Boston.
Boston as a whole?
Sure.
Okay. Number three, Cowboy fans? Yankee fans?
Cowboy-Yankee fans?
The Cowboy-Yankee fans.
The Cowboy-Yankee fans.
The Yankee-Cowboy fans.
And those are the worst, the people that root for both.
We need 4 and 5.
Duke basketball?
Duke 4, Philadelphia 5. We all set?
Ohio State, dishonorable mention.
All right, Shope and the Bulldog next. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Jody Biasi, Derek Kramer, and John Simon working hard behind the board on WGR.